Hey, it's Sam Alai here, founder of My Legal Academy, where we help lawyers scale and automate their law firms so they could sign up more clients and reclaim their precious time. If you're looking to grow your practice while working less, click the link in the show notes to book a free call to discover a radically different way to grow your law firm. Enjoy the episode.
The legal profession has a dangerous obsession with glorifying exhaustion. All-nighters are celebrated, weekend work is most usually expected, and always being on is the unspoken requirement. This culture isn't just unhealthy, it's unsustainable and ineffective. Today, we're burning it all to the ground. This isn't another self-care prep talk about taking bubble baths while your inbox explodes. We're actually going to dismantle the structural issues that create burnout in the first place. And then we're going to explore how visionary women are building high-performing firms that treat well-being as a strategic advantage, not an afterthought. Today, our guest, Lex Lee, has engineered a revolutionary approach to legal practice that delivers exceptional results without the burnout tax. She's here to share the unfiltered truth about how she transformed from burnout victim to architect of sustainable thriving and how you can do the same. All right. Welcome back to the fourth episode of the Built to Lead series on the Law Entrepreneur podcast. I'm super excited today. We're talking about a extremely needed discussion. I know a lot of people talk about burnout, but I don't think a lot of people really approach the subject with lawyers and especially women lawyers. And so I'm excited to have Lex Lee on today. I'm going to let her introduce herself and then we're going to jump right in.
Well, thank you for having me, Bridget. I'm excited to be here. And I am Lex Lee Overton. I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer for 30 years. I'm based out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. For the last 10 years or so, I've been working with lawyers and law firms all over the country. And I help them with everything to do with team performance. Helping people to be healthier and happier in what they do is really my mission and passion. And as a lawyer and a woman lawyer at that, I definitely have experienced burnout. So I think it is one of the most important things that we can be talking about as leaders too.
I agree. I think that I've done a little bit of, especially leading up to this episode, I've done a little bit diving into kind of the discussion on burnout, and it kind of always revolves around the same topics. It always revolves around either, you know, working too much and not bringing in your, you know, your personal life, but I have a little bit different take on it as well. So I'm kind of excited to see kind of how you got into burnout. Like, obviously, you must have experienced it and it must have led you into this journey on you wanting to help other lawyers with it.
Right. Yes. As a young lawyer, I was very fortunate. I came out of law school and went into practice with my parents. And my dad believed the best way to learn was to be on your feet in a courtroom. So he threw me right in. So I was very lucky right out starting to try cases with him, et cetera. So at the age of 30, though, I found myself walking out of a courtroom in northern Louisiana after a motion hearing and thinking I was having a heart attack. And I went to the emergency room and they thought I was too and gave me nitroglycerin and bottomed out my blood pressure because I wasn't. But it sent me through all kinds of tests at that time. They looked at everything and they finally said, you know what? Your esophagus is contracting down. There's a, you know, it involves the same muscles. That's why it's so painful. You need to be on medication. I was like, that's crazy. I don't need to be on medication. What's wrong with me is I am working an insane number of hours. It's very stressful, very adversarial. I have a 3-year-old. This is a sign that my body's saying it's too much and I don't want to be doing this for the next, you know, I was only 30, 25 years or so and being on meds to be able to survive it. I love the work that I did, but it's hard and it's hard on you emotionally, physically, mentally, unless you know how to manage it. And so I set me on a path of learning how to manage that. Like, how do we actually thrive in this business instead of just being where we're just barely keeping our head above water? And it,
do you think you had any, like, that was obviously like the breaking point moment, but do you think that now, obviously hindsight, but that there was some warning signs before that, that we just weren't taught to catch or just didn't realize. I mean, 30 is like extremely early to experience that as well.
Right. There were warning signs in law school. I wasn't sleeping in law school. It's the first time my husband actually met me after class one day and sheepishly handed me a box of sleeping pills from over the counter. Like, would you please take some of these? Because you're very difficult to work with, right? It's like, and that just got worse. And that's one of the things I see when I'm coaching lawyers is the first thing is that sign of not sleeping, the inability to sleep well, is just your body's early message of the response that you're having to constantly being in fight or flight and all the biochemical hormonal changes that happen and that we're just in that constantly, which is a heavy load of cortisol, which has a very long term effect on the body. So if you're out there and you're not sleeping, that's the number one sign early on. But I think a lot of times, you know, lawyers are overachievers. So we miss a lot of that because we've been doing it for so long and pushing so hard. And unfortunately, the profession is one that has a lot of what I call unwritten rules. And I talk about we got to break some rules to do this better. And, you know, one of those is if you're not exhausted, you're not doing enough. And that women have that as a also. And that, you know, success in law requires you to sacrifice your personal life. That's why you hear the stories around, oh, you should bring your personal life in. Or we can think about the rule, like the best leaders are grinding harder than anyone else. That's a rule that's actually totally false. If you want to be a powerful leader, you should be talking about well-being. You should be teaching it. You should be modeling it because that's how you have high performance from people, not from people who are exhausted, stressed out, and actually impaired in how they're functioning from that space.
Yeah, I think it's the, and I don't like to say like women, like we wear exhaustion as a badge of honor because I don't think that's a thing. I don't think that's the case. I just think that it's like, you're a mom, we're going to work, we're trying to be committed to all the things, we're trying to prove ourselves here, we're trying to do all the things at home. I think it just becomes a part of who we are. And I think that a lot of people sit back and I think it's exactly what you said. They say, well, I'm not overdoing it, or I'm not exerting, or I'm not, you know, exhausted by the end of the day. So I must not have accomplished anything today. Like I must have not have gotten all the time.
Right. And that almost seems like the norm. And so what happens is we miss or we override the signals from our body and from our heart, from our souls that are telling us that we really need to slow down, you know? And so it is important to start to like, to stop and think about like, really, where are you? Are you at the best that you could be physically, mentally, emotionally? And if you're not, you can change that. But unfortunately, I do think for women, it's hard. It's like, there are a lot of different roles. It's not just being a lawyer, there are a lot of invisible loads that we carry professionally, emotionally, relationally, the different roles, you know, if you're a parent, but a sibling, a daughter, a friend, all of these things, along with all the roles that you have professionally, that really everything you do takes energy. And we're energy beings, and we only have so much energy when you wake up in the morning, right? So how much energy I have today depends on a lot of different factors. Did I sleep? What am I eating? Am I exercising? What kind of stress am I under? All of these things add up to what's in your energy battery. And what I have learned and what I teach is that to really be a powerful leader, to be a powerful lawyer, it's about energy mastery. And understanding and knowing your energy and knowing how to do daily practices that will replenish, restore your energy. Just like you plug in your cell phone at night, there are certain practices that you can do every day that will help you with that. Now, what I hear is, oh, well, but you know, that takes time. I'm not asking, doesn't take a whole lot of time, especially if you're doing it daily because you're starting to wire it into your system and some very powerful things that can help with energy levels. But the opposite of what happens is this is why, you know, people are talking about overwhelm. I just did a post in my Facebook group this week, and the number one answer and number one struggle for lawyers and leaders, the question, what's your number one struggle? It was fatigue and overwhelm. And that all comes down to energy management. So if you're really low on energy, I mean, how do we perform? If I'm really wake up today and I am cranky, I am tired, and an email comes in from opposing counsel that's aggressive, how am I going to handle that? Not well.
Yeah.
My teenager says when I'm in that mode, he's like, there's a whole lot of energy coming from you, mom. Like, basically check yourself, right? Because I've taught him a lot about how to manage his own energy. But what happens is that it's not just our body that pays the price. It's our clarity. It's our memory. It's our creativity. So stress and being in a chronic stress response impairs executive functioning, the things like foresight, which we need as lawyers, planning, problem solving, decision making, being on in the moment. Those are your superpowers. It takes energy to do that. And it takes what we call coherency. And coherency is all about having alignment between the different, the major systems, right? So the mind and the heart and what's happening physically in the body. And there's a lot of science behind this that is being revealed. It shows how powerful it is when you understand that it's really about energy management.
Do you think there's a specific, I mean, there probably is multiple, but I think what would be like the number one specific belief that you think lawyers, and especially women, have to reject to kind of prioritize well-being? Because I feel like there's so many stigmas that come along with all of it that I think there's just too many. But I mean, I'm sure there's like a number one belief that we could look at. Which one do you think that would be?
That there's this unwritten rule that I need to take care of everything else first before I have the time for me. And it absolutely should be the reverse. If you take the time to restore, replenish, to manage your energy, you will be better for everyone else. And that's family, clients, you know, whatever role that you're in. And it's really crazy because people know this, but we do the total opposite, especially us as women. There's a, you know, there's some kind of unwritten, like, I'm not worthy of being first, right? There's this unwritten rule that I have to take care of everybody else first before I look at me. And the opposite is absolutely true. And I think men do this too. I mean, I work with, you know, lawyers that are male too. We all do it, but women really do it. And that comes from, you know, a lot of different things, right? So it's what we saw in our own families. You know, my mom was a lawyer, had seven children, didn't practice law until way later in life. Because why? She's taking care of the family, right? She's taking care of the kids, doing all the things that had to be done. That was put on the back burner. What do you think about that?
I think that that's definitely, I think that it's how you're raised. I was raised by my grandmother, so that was the exact same thing. Everyone else came first, even to the point of, you know, we would all, okay, everybody's going to eat, and she would eat what was left. And I'm like, I would be like, well, how come you don't understand and you don't really place it until you get older and then you see it and then you see yourself doing those same things. And so I'm watching, you know, some of the women that we work with and they do the same thing. And I think it's like that they have a big heart. You know, they look at it and I take care of all of my people. I take care of everyone around me. I prioritize that. I prioritize my firm because I think that that is what is going to make me profitable. My clients are going to be happy. But on the back end of that, it's, what about you? And that is like such an afterthought that I don't know where it comes from. Fear or comes from programming or maybe both.
I think it comes from both. I think it's some of what we've experienced and what we've been taught. I also think it comes from what you just said, like having a big heart. We're nurturers, right? We're nurturers by nature. And so part of that is like, what just like what we want to do to nurture and take care of others. And that comes, that extends to our clients, extends to our team members, et cetera. But it's so amazing when you get that if you would focus on being the best version of yourself and doing what you need to do to make that happen, that it affects everything about how you show up, how you lead, how you feel at the end of the day, but it also affects the bottom line and it affects the success. And to be more profitable, you should be focusing on well-being first, right? Or energy management first, because the more energy that you have to show up to be better, then the more that you're eventually going to affect the bottom line. And that's true for your team too. That's why I'm saying as leaders, we should be talking about this because it affects performance. If people are stressed out, if they're overwhelmed, if they're anxious, they are not performing as well as they could be if the opposite was true. And you can train. So that's what we do with teams. We train teams. What are these practices that they do to recognize how do they bring in their own coherency? Because that affects the team coherency. So the team is only as strong as an individual. So if one team member is really stressed out, they're coming in and they're taking that out on other people. It's affecting their performance. It brings in more errors, more mistakes, et cetera. But it also affects how they deal with clients, how they deal with the collaboration with their team members. We know that with team coherency, everything about it is defined by collaboration and harmony and always efficient use of energy. So the team is only going to be as coherent and high performing as each individual is. We have to teach awareness of what that looks like. And it's really not hard. It's just having some knowledge behind what does it take to empower you. And what science is showing us is that the most important thing that we can look at that's affecting our physiology is actually our emotions. So every emotion that we have, whether it's a great emotion, like we're happy, joyful, calm, or it's frustration, anxiety, anger, every single emotion that we have impacts your physiology. And it's either empowering it or it's disempowering it. So I have this crazy example that I usually use a slide to show it, but I can describe it to you that it's basically a slide from a heart rate monitor that was worn by a husband. And he's sitting in the car and his wife is driving. Then that's enough to probably make most men's heart rate elevate, but that wasn't the reason. He's sitting and it starts out and you can see that his heart rate is about 60 beats per minute. And he's sitting still and he's talking to her. And they get in an argument. And where they get in an argument, his heart rate shoots up to 140, almost 160. He is sitting still in the car. And his emotion is that he's angry, right? He's frustrated by the conversation. Those emotions are causing his heart rate to jump up. And they stayed elevated. When the argument was over, his heart rate still stayed elevated for more than an hour before it returned back to the baseline. So if you think about how many times during the day do we get a stressful email or we're spinning out mentally because we're worried about something, that's anxiety. That's affecting the physiology. It's the same influence on your body. So when we're in those states, we know that we're not coherent. And our heart, besides heart rate, our heart rhythms actually become incoherent. They look really crazy on a scan. They look really jagged and chaotic. And what we know is that when the heart is doing that and the rhythms in the heart are doing that, that's affecting your brain waves. And that affects that the brain waves in the state that you want to be in for high performance to access the part of the brain that has to do with those executive functioning. So when I teach law students, I tell them, if you would learn to manage your energy, and meditation is a way to do that. That's always the word that scares lawyers, but that's one of the things that you could do, right? But we could all take a deep breath in and out right now. And we just did a meditative practice, right? I'm not talking about sitting on a mountain with a lit candle. There are simple things that you can do that instantly change your state. But what I tell law students is like, if you learn to do this, you would be smarter, because there's science that actually says that when you're incoherent in these emotional states, you're not as smart as you could be. And once I started to really study energy and what does it do on emotions and the effect on our systems, the effect on our brains, I understood that when I was with opposing counsel who was tripped out over something, like, but gets really aggressive, I would think, yep, now I got you, because you're not, yes. You're so triggered, you won't be able to keep up with me because I am in a different place. And so we actually teach that. We have ways of showing and using biofeedback to teach people about being able to see their heart rhythms, to give them the science behind it, to see how quickly they can change their state. We do practices that when we put people on heart rhythm monitors, we can see them incoherent, and we can teach them a practice that within 1 minute, their heart rhythms become coherent. It's not hard. It just takes practice and intention. So I think that's the other thing is, like, you know, one is this rule that we put everybody else first. The other thing is that it's impossible to do, right? Or it takes too long, or you're just adding something else to my day. and when actually it's the thing that's going to fuel you for the best of the rest of your day.
Well, what about the thoughts of, and I mean, I'm definitely someone that falls into this cycle of, you know, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for the next person. So when somebody tells me, oh, you know, especially, I mean, my son's older now, but especially when he was little, be like, oh, just time block and then turn off your phone and get no distractions. And I'm like, I'm a mom. He's six. I can't turn off my phone. Like, what if something happens? You know, you can't. So I hear a lot of that from women, and it's for men, it's so much easier. And, you know, I get that frustration of, okay, it's easy for you to go into your office, shut off your phone, ignore everything and time block and get all of your things done. But that is not an option for me. So I look at it and I say, okay, so how do I make these specific things an option? How do I do these things? And then exactly what you said, meditation scares the crap out of people. I don't have time to sit and meditate for an hour. What would be your thoughts on, you know, obviously finding something that works for you, but something that works, you know, within the parameters of the things that you're teaching and that actually work physical, you know, as well as mental?
Yeah. So everything is what, you know, part of what we're teaching is the science behind the physiology and showing how that affects the performance, right? So then people are like, oh, now I understand. I will tell you that I'm not talking about bubble baths or a spa weekend. I'm talking about building daily practices that restore your nervous system, which basically recharge your inner battery. So you put you back in charge of your responses and back in charge of any situation, which when we talk about overwhelm, a lot of times we're talking about everything feels out of control. This is about coming back in control of that. So just like you would take the time to exercise daily, this is building in and taking ownership of the things that are going to make you better. So I know if I exercise, that makes me feel better, right? These are just practices that do that because they affect your physiology, but they also affect your emotional and mental state, which help you to be better in all of those roles. Now, time blocking, obviously, that's something that we teach as a time management tool. I'm not saying that these practices have to take a long time. If you would do 5 minutes of a coherency practice, you can drastically change your state, and you will have in that 5 minutes really refuel your system to be better performing for the next 3 hours. So I often do it thinking about different meetings that I go into. I take 2 to 3 minutes to do a breathing practice that I know that I've trained my body that it really responds to. And as far as different tools, there's lots of different tools that are easy. So I always talk about when I'm teaching meditation that you should think of it like the word athletics. There's lots of sports under the athletic word. There are lots of types of meditation. And I just gave that example of just taking a conscious, intentional breath in and out. Long and slow is very important because it actually triggers the vagus nerve, which is running from your head down into your gut. It helps you to get out of that fight or flight response, which if you're in that, you're incoherent because your heart rhythms are going crazy. Your brain waves are responding to that. It means you're not as high performing as you can be. There are lots of tools like that that are just simple daily 5 minute practices that we teach. Cause I know that's the number one objection I get. I don't have time for this. Well, you can't afford not to have the time for it. Cause eventually you are going to make a mistake. You're going to make an error. You're going to miss a deadline. You're going to do something. You're going to go off on a team member or an opposing counsel in a way that you hadn't, or you're going to miss something important in an argument because your brain is so frazzled for being so stressed out that you can't think. And it's costing us. There's all kinds of studies that show that, like for professional misconduct, for disciplinary proceedings for lawyers, that they are strongly linked to people who are overwhelmed and have maybe even depressive disorders and, you know, alcohol abuse and those kind of things that are affecting executive functioning, being depressed. Sometimes the depression is a result of your nervous system being totally worn out and it can't take anymore, right? And if you're in that state, then you're not performing as well. And we make mistakes with that. And then we see that shows up in a large majority of disciplinary proceedings, things that could be prevented if we were just better taking care of ourselves or if we understood that.
If we bring that, all of that back to, and this obviously goes with, you know, I don't have time. I'd probably be a millionaire if I had you know, the money that it would be at every time a lawyer told me that they didn't have time. And I get it because I understand, you know, what it takes. But I think part of what I'm seeing, and I think this brings it back to two things. Obviously, client expectation, client demands can always be something that can be a driver of overwhelm and burnout. But I also see a lot of, and I think this is the type A, you know, I have the same type A personality where I just want to get it done, and getting it done myself and doing it myself gets it done in my, you know, in your head faster. It's done right versus, you know, engaging with your team, engaging with the people that you've hired to do the work. And that really is, I just see a lot of cycle patterns of that. And it's taking on so much. I think you're taking on so much stress of doing all of it yourself, even though, and then it, to me, it's stressful. You have a team and you see that team there and they're like frustrated that they're not doing the work. But that reverts back to the fact that it's still back on you and you're kind of part of the problem. I mean, for lack of, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, rude, but it is that like you are the problem. So at that point inside the firm, what would you say is like, what's a starting point for that? For somebody who feels all of those things, they're overwhelmed by client demands, they're overwhelmed with their team because they still feel like they're doing it all.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of different problems there. When someone tells me, oh, I'm doing it all and I don't know where my time goes, the very first thing I'm going to make them do is, and I say, when people come to work with me, is like, you got to agree to do what I ask you. If you do, I'm going to change your life because it works. But one of the first things I have them do is do a time audit. They have to track their time for everything that they do. Then we simply sit down and look at that because everything, the way that you're spending your time is how you're spending your energy. So when we can look at that, then we can say, do you see you're doing these things that actually should be delegated to your team? And the fact that you're not delegating it is on you. So there's a quick fix to this. It's one, first having the awareness. The first step to change anything is to have awareness. So you have to do something that brings that into your knowledge. And most of the time, people are blown away when they see how much that they're doing, that they could be paying someone way less when their hourly rate is to actually do. And it does, in that frees up the, I call it buying back your time, right? I hire people who can do things that don't require just me to do it, and that they can do it at a less than what my rate is. And then I'm buying back my time to do the things that, one, fuel me, that I have joy and passion about, and two, make me the most profit. So that's one thing of what you just described. The other is that you're frustrated and overwhelmed as a leader. Your team is also experiencing that because who you are affects everyone else. And you have to own that as a leader. If you're not, then your team is, I'm just going to say it, is not as strong as they could be. And they are mirroring and picking up what you're doing. And what we know is that science is showing that whatever state that I'm in, if I am really grounded, coherent, calm, centered, present, that I can affect anybody in my presence the same way. Our nervous system actually picks up that energy and we can change. So if my heart rhythms are really coherent, and they've done tests to show this, they put four people in a room. Three people have been trained to do coherency practices. They know how to do this little breathing practice and get their heart rhythms coherent. Fourth person doesn't have a clue what's happening. Four people in the room, they're all on heart rhythm monitors, and they're all incoherent. The researchers signal to the three to do the coherency practice, which is simply a breathing practice that also brings in a regenerative feeling like gratitude. When their heart rhythms become coherent, the fourth becomes coherent. So they are affecting that person's heart rhythm. So science is just proving what we know. If I'm really anxious and are you talking to a very anxious client, you can get anxious, right? And so knowing how to hold the space and being really clear and aware of what your state is and knowing that that affects other people, impacts other people, as a leader, you can help to impact your team members, but you also can change how you handle with clients. I had someone say to me today that I was interviewing for a team. And at the end, she said, I was so nervous coming in here. There is something about you that just made me all of a sudden, I realized I was just totally okay, right? That's an example of how the presence that we hold of impacts others. And as leaders, if we had more awareness of that, that is key. So if you're showing up overwhelmed, you're impacting your team like that. One, you're not performing, you're not delegating, you're not doing the things that you should be doing, and you're not doing them as well as you can, but you also are impacting them in response to that.
Yeah, that is that you completely led into my next question, talking about like unintentionally kind of perpetuating burnout culture for your team. You're burning them out and with your behavior without really knowing it, without, you know, obviously not doing it intentionally. But how do you, what would you say, obviously awareness, number one, that you're aware that that could be happening, but what would be a way to, for someone right now that's experiencing that, could kind of model a more sustainable form of leadership in that aspect for their team without, you know, obviously we're saying this is a practice, this is something you're going to have to do, this is probably something you're going to have to explain, express to them how it should be done as a team. But, and I don't want to add just another, you know, I'm not giving you another SOP to create or another playbook or another process, but what would be something easy for them to take on, you know, right now?
Well, the very first thing is what we just talked about, is awareness of the current state. So before your next task, before you send that email where you might be triggered in a response to someone, you want to stop and just say, what state am I in right now? What energy am I putting into this? What am I bringing into this meeting? If I walk into my team and I'm stressed out, it's like my 17-year-old, you know, there's certain ways we all behave. There are certain ways that we respond. Me, I get very terse in my communication. I get short. My tone doesn't usually raise, but it gets really sharp, right? I also get very impatient because I'm a fast variety pace worker, and I know that about myself. Then most of my team members are wired opposite of me. They are very detailed, slow, methodical workers, and I want them to be that because I am not a detailed-oriented person, so I want them to catch my mistakes. But I can drive them a little crazy because if I am really anxious, then I could really be like, very impatient about what I want. So first is knowing awareness of what is the state right now? It's really great to understand about your team members and how people are wired. And that we use science to do that too with teams when we're working with them. But the first thing is just to name it. What is the state that I am? And then knowing that if I'm really anxious, I can do something for 3 minutes that will shift that. And I'm talking about, it could be, you know, there are lots of different tools. The simplest one is using some breathing practices that actually change the physiology and then bringing in a regenerative feeling. So we teach a practice that is called heart coherency. It's a very fast one of just breathing slow, bringing your awareness to the center of your chest and following your breath just for a minute in and out of the heart space. And everybody is listening could do that right now as I'm talking. I can do it. I do it often when I talk. I follow my breath in and out of the heart space, and then I try to slow it down a little bit. And then as I'm with someone or right before I go into a meeting, when I'm doing and following that breathing just for a minute or two, then I think about something I'm grateful for. Gratitude is a scientifically proven practice for high performance. So just simply thinking about someone or something that you're grateful for while you slow your breathing down will help you be more coherent and get out of the state of what you don't want to bring to other people. That alone will make you powerful. I have all kinds of recordings on this. And if, you know, any of your listeners in the comments or on Instagram, follow me and put the word energy, I will send them a free where they can download audios. We could put it in the show notes if you guys have that, where there's lots of audios of this that make it very easy just to follow along. But that's one. So one is asking, what state am I in? The second is, so the state is the physical, like what's the emotional? And the second is what's the story I'm telling myself right now? Because there's usually some disempowering story that's triggering the emotion. And maybe it's that there's not enough time. I'm never going to get it done, right? That's often a thing that's running in people's heads. When we were just talking, when you just said, if I could be rich, every time a lawyer said that to me, right? So that's running in the background. Well, as soon as you're thinking that story, that brings in anxiety. So now we've brought in an emotion that's disempowering and draining your energy and also causing you to perform less, because we know that you don't have full access to your brain. That's basically what's happening. If you want to break it down in simple science, so you want to think about, what am I telling myself right now? And then you can ask yourself, is that really true? So is it really absolutely true that I don't have enough time to get this done? No, that's just the thing that we say. And his answer is always no, because nothing is absolute, right? So it's like nothing is going to be here that isn't absolutely true all the time. So no, it's not true. And then you just have to come in with a more empowering statement and a more empowering belief. So we teach a lot about mindset, which is the story. That's a very simple practice. It takes 3 minutes to do it.
So what do you think then, you know, we work with a lot of lawyers who have teams, remote teams, you know, not physically in the office, and they do, you know, stand-up meetings sometimes once or twice a week. I'm curious as to what could be like a check-in or a metric where they could actually monitor. I mean, because a lot of us hide, especially women, we can mask our emotions very well. You know, we could be overwhelmed and frustrated. I'm going to show up to my staff meeting and I'm going to be on, and then I'm going to get off and I'm going to be like, oh my God. So in order to really monitor that and to be able to understand what's going on with the team, to be able to prevent some of this before it happens, what's a check-in that they could do with their team that just on a standard meeting that you could just use?
You should constantly be asking for feedback and creating a space that is okay to give it. And it's never okay to give it if the leader isn't asking for it. And so feedback shouldn't just be in those group stand-up meetings. It really needs to be every time you're in a one-on-one. There needs to be a closing question that is asking and checking in. How are you doing? What are you challenged with? What can I help you with? That changes the culture completely. And one of the things that we do in the stand-up meetings, remember who I am affects everybody else. So there are some things that bring in what we call group coherency. And one of those is simply, we put it in different ways. Sometimes if I say celebrate a win, people say, I don't have a win. I'm like, oh, come on, you're breathing. That's a win. I didn't ask you to say you won in court a major motion. I'm asking you to be in gratitude, because we know that there's so much about what I said scientifically that shows us of how gratitude is tied to performance. It increases performance like 50% on teams that regularly practice gratitude. Performance increases that much. So if you start a meeting with, let's hear a win, and the win is defined in something you accomplished, something you did, even it was just checking something off your to-do list. When you start a meeting that way, you're starting with an energy that starts to create coherency, and you're getting everyone to change the story to something positive. So we are changing the energy of where we start. We may end this meeting have to discuss something really challenging, but first we're going to start with this so that we're more coherent, so that we can handle the challenging conversation. It's not hard. It's just knowing simple techniques like that to do. So one of the things we do with teams every single time, I mean, I don't care if it's more than three people, we're asking for what a win is, so that we're all starting in the same place. But then you also have to ask, usually we have our teams ask, what's your number one priority this week? What's a win? What's the number one priority this week? And what's something you feel like you're going to be challenged by? And what help do you need from the team? That opens a discussion for people to be more open about where they are and for the team to collaborate to help. And if you do that every week, people will start to participate in that as long as you're modeling it. If I, as a leader, can say, this is my number one priority, here's what I think I'm going to be challenged with, and here's how I could use your help. And it might just be for you to hold up a hand when you see that I'm not being the way that I said I wanted to show up, right? Giving you permission to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. I think bringing it back to, and this would be even just my thoughts, and it's easy to turn and do that. But then when I think about the actual lawyers, when we get them on their own, or we're physically having the conversations with them within, you know, multiple coaches that work with them, but it is that question on, you know, so what are we implementing? What's going well? You know, what's usually, and I don't want to say it's all of them, but a lot of times their response is nothing's working. This doesn't work. Nothing's working. You know, everything is horrible. And I'm like, okay. And it's very hard to point out, even if you point out the little things, like you said, it could be something simple. Oh, well, you did great. You completed everything that was on this list that we said we wanted to complete last week. They don't see that as a win. And so for me, it's trying to balance where it's very easy for us to say as our team, great, that's your win. That's what's working. This is what we can see, but they cannot seem to apply that to themselves. I'm sure you see it often, but what are your thoughts on the direction for that?
Well, what my thought on that is that that's someone who's overwhelmed and is living in a state of survival and needs some help, right? So first, I would say that we want to, and because that also gives me a mindset of more of a, what we call fixed mindset. We also could call it a victim mindset. So when someone is coming in and like nothing is good, then I'm going to turn it around and have them be solution focused. Well, what do you think that we could do this week that could change that? Or on this specific situation, what is one thing that would help to fix this? You've got to get them to switch the story that's going on in the head. And that tells me they're probably living in a space where they're burned out and they really don't know how to do that. And so when we talk about this gratitude practice, the reason why that works is because it's actually a confirmation bias. You're training your brain to look at the world in a certain way. And if you do that every morning, first thing, and you just be grateful for a couple of, you know, I do a gratitude practice. I've done it for 30 years of just looking at the last 24 hours and trying to be grateful for the small things that happened in the last 24 hours so that I'm training myself to see that. But what that does to the brain when you're doing it first thing in the morning is you're bringing in, the brain says, oh, this is where we are. Let me see if I can find more things that are like that. That's that confirmation bias. So the way the view, the lens that you put onto the world. So that is someone is a leader who's got the opposite lens. And it didn't matter if they make more money or, you know, have the biggest win in court, they're always going to be in that state. That's someone who needs help with some individual awareness and reflection of that. And unfortunately, and if that's how a leader is leading, man, that's horrible on the team. That's hard. So people won't stay with leaders like that. You'll have high turnover. People want to feel like they're in a space where they are seen and appreciated and they're a part of something, that they're achieving something. And if we have leaders that are saying it's nothing good, even if it was good, nobody stays around for that.
I agree. Yeah, I think that runs more prevalent than I think most people think. And probably there's not a lot of, you know, introspect on where that comes from. So I've seen that far too often. What do you think, and this is like industry-wide, so what would you think on an industry level needs to happen, or more conversations that need to be around it that can actually make, you know, practicing law more sustainable, especially for women? I mean, the conversations that are out there generally started this series because I've started searching for what women are talking about in the space around specific things. And I found very little. And I know women are, you talk about these things in closed, you know, circles and closed conversations. But I think it needs to be talked about a lot more often, a lot more, you know, so that people can feel comfortable talking about it. Because I see a lot of, okay, I'm overwhelmed, I'm burnt out, just leave law. I'm just going to help you leave law. Well, not everybody, you know, you went to law school, if you love it, why would you want to leave it? And I understand some people do because they find, you know, excitement in other things. But I think we're missing a huge conversation to say there is a huge space between I'm overwhelmed now, I just need to leave law, and what you can actually do.
Yeah. So that's why we're seeing a lot of states have passed where you have to have, and if you're offering a CLE, there has to be an hour of wellness. And then they use the term wellness or well-being. You know, the ABA did a study in 2016 that really triggered that and started to be like, law firms need to be leading with well-being. And what does that mean? And, you know, the ABA defines it as thriving across all areas of life. And, you know, holistically looking at that. And that's part of it. We do need to bring in some of that. And that's why we're seeing so much about that. So we do need to be having conversations about it, whether we call it wellness, well-being, great mindset, high performance, whatever it's going to make people show up to talk about. This is the same thing. It's about at the end of the day, I don't want to be exhausted and uninspired and then sick, because that, you run on low energy long enough, it is going to have physical consequences like it did for me at 30. Some people, it takes a lot longer than that. I was just a high, big litigator at 30 years old. I was very lucky, right? But I was also under the pressure of that. And what happens is if we have the energy's low and we're never knowing how to refuel it and we're not doing what we need to do, eventually your body is going to respond to that. You're going to have physical symptoms. You're going to get sick more often. This is true for your team too. If you're not teaching wellness and well-being, people will be sick, and that's the high turnover and all the things. We literally don't have the energy to support our immune system because our body is using the energy just to think it can survive because it's in fight or flight. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Usually you've given a million tips in here, so this is like perfect. Usually towards the end, to give everybody like one really good strategic tip, but you've given many, which I think is great. People can come back and like listen to this multiple times and kind of realize the things that can be done, and it's not as difficult as it seems. I think if we stop, glorifying, the exhaustion and pushing ourselves to the, this is hustle. I'm a big proponent of, I like people that like to hustle, but I think there's a version of hustling without pushing to exhaustion. We can create the things that we want to create. We can, establish goals and hit them without treating well-being as, negotiable. Like I can negotiate with myself on that part of it. Because you've experienced it, what becomes possible in your practice when you actually make well-being non-negotiable?
Your whole life changes. Everything changes. You're more creative. You're happier in your relationships, and that's relationships with your family. That's a relationship with your team. You're more collaborative. We know that when team members are taught this way of being and being in a coherent state, which would be a wellness state, right? Well-being state, that we're more collaborative. We're more communicative. We're easier to get along with. We're more creative. We can think out of the box. All of that changes. Just simply by having awareness of who you are, which means, what kind of leader do you want to be today? What state are you in? What energy are you bringing into the space? What energy are you bringing to the room? And being really intentional with that and teaching people that it is vital to the performance of our team that we all hold the space, that we learn how to manage energy to be in a better state for all of our success. If you're leading that, it changes everything about how you show up in life, but also how your team will and how you're affecting your clients. I mean, all of it, it makes a difference in everything.
Love that. I think that is the leading piece of this. Like what changes? Everything can change before you're forced to, or your body forces it to change for you. I think there's a lot of, I've had experience with that. Sometimes you push so hard that your body just pushes back, and then you're forced to give in and you have to make changes. I think before you get to that stage, you have the ability to stop that. If there was one last thing that you want to leave the listeners with today, what would that be?
I think just to repeat that you can lead differently if you decided to lead with energy intelligence or well-being or wellness, whatever you want to call it. I like to think of it in terms of like, I'm an energy being, right? We all are. If I wanted to measure your heart, beat, rhythms, et cetera, I'm measuring the energy that your heart is doing. But if we would learn to lead with intelligence and let the world see what that looks like, especially when a woman leads from wholeness and not from exhaustion, it can change everything.
I love that. I appreciate this you coming on. I think we will attach, obviously, in the show notes, a way for you to find Lexi Lee on Instagram. That way you can tap into those energy resources. And I would just challenge each and every one of you to identify one burnout-inducing thing that you have going on in your practice right now and look at how you can work on eliminating that in small increments. Just like she said, 3 minutes, what can you do for 3 minutes? If that seems like too much or just overwhelming, what can you do for 1 minute a day that you can sustain and support it until it becomes, normal, your normal everyday practice? That's, I think, where I would leave that at.
Yeah, that's great. And when you do that, you'll start to see that you feel better, you perform better. So then it reinforces doing more of it.
I love that. I appreciate you coming on. Again, if you want to reach out to Lexi, we will attach it in the show notes. And if you have any other questions and you want to reach out, please let us know. We'll inside our community and inside our programs, we are always adding in bonuses for our members. So I think this is something that we'll definitely talk about in the future, because I think it's a much needed conversation. And I think the more people work on it together, I think the more conversations that will be had.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.